This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 292. Today, we're going to cover the latest news from Microsoft Azure and Office 365, as well as some service updates. Recorded live, February the 22nd, 2019. Hey, we all know that sometimes shift happens. That's why this spring, the inaugural Shift Happens conference will be coming to Washington, D.C. on June 12th and 13th. Hear from industry heavy hitters, change agents, and innovators as they share digital transformation wisdom, with keynotes from Microsoft's Jeff Teper and Tony Towns-Whitley, and analyst insights from Constellation and Forrester Research. This event is not to be missed. Over 2 days, find out how to get the most out of your Microsoft Office 365 and SharePoint investments, and hear about the success and failures firsthand from some of the largest and most regulated organizations. For more information, visit www.shifthappenscon.com and use the discount code CLOUDSHOW for 25% off registration for both single and group discounts. Hello, everybody. This is Andrew. Today, I'm flying solo without my trusty co-host, CJ. CJ is off with his family in a, I think he's in Disney World or Disneyland down in California this week. So I decided I'd take the show over and be your solo host for the day. Of course, interesting, you know, thing with him is that I think that the kids are on their winter break from school following, like, was it 2 weeks, I think, of the snowpocalypse. So they've got like 3 weeks of kids being out of school for like 3 weeks. So they're going to go back and probably forget how to read. Then you get those kids back in school, CJ. But at any rate, I'm taking the show over as a solo today or this week. It just doesn't make sense for him to try and join in with this. So you get to deal with me just for this 1 week. In today's episode, you know, I don't really have a whole lot of updates to share for in terms of our banter, just kind of like shooting the breeze at the beginning of the show like we normally do. Cards on the table, we just recorded our other episode, episode 191, just a couple days ago, right before CJ went out of town due to some scheduling challenges we had last week. And so I don't really have a whole lot to share with you, stuff that I've done lately, other than just plugging along, working on my Mastering the SharePoint Framework course, trying to start pumping out some more content. So what I do have, though, I've noticed a couple things. You know, I've got a bunch of Azure updates that I'm going to share, but I've noticed in the last week that my inbox has gotten just hammered from Office 365 about different updates that they've had to their platform and to their service. So I figured this is a great opportunity to talk about what updates we've got from Office 365. So the show notes for this episode, we're going to have a lot of links in there. Got a pick at the end, got a listener pick at the end as well. But the links, you'll find all these links in the show notes. There's just one thing with the show notes, with the links from Office 365 that I'm going to have listed. I'm going to have the actual, it's not an incident, but the, what do you call it? The ID of the thing that we're going to talk about. It's listed in the show notes. I've got the title of the item as well, and there's a link. But just know that these links won't work unless you're logged into the Microsoft 365 Admin Center portal. You may be familiar with that as the Office 365 Admin Portal, but it's been renamed to the Microsoft 365 Admin Center. So you have to be logged in order to see those things. So you may, if you go to click on it, you'll see a little bit of an error. So if you're not a 365 customer or you don't have access to the Office 365 Admin Center, these links aren't going to be terribly useful for you. But, you know, I still want to make sure that I provide them to you. So why don't we go ahead, dive in and get started and start covering some of the news. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously. If you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. All right, I'm going to start with some of this Office 365 related news here. I've got a handful of things that Microsoft has published some updates around. So I figured let's go with some of the bigger stuff that we're going to start with. The first one that I've got here is around the Admin Center itself. So the title of this item is the Admin Center support updates, including full page ticket history, view, and callback scheduling is now available to you. This is MC173891. So the Microsoft 365 support is designed to be effective and efficient and transparent to ensure high quality experience. And so what they've done now is they've got a couple new features that are coming. So these new features coming to the admin center that are going to be rolled out first to targeted release admins and then out to all admins. This is all going out in the first quarter of calendar year 2019, which it's kind of interesting that this is published now because it came out on February the 20th and they're saying first quarter of calendar year 2019. That really only means it's going to be coming out in the next month. So we have full page ticket history, which is a way for you to review all comms with support directly in the admin center. There's resolution steps, so you can immediately view the service request resolution steps. The details are going to show up only for the service requests that have been created after the new experience has been deployed. So if you have a service request you defined before these updates were shipped, you won't see those resolution steps. Callback scheduling, you can receive support directly from Microsoft on your schedule with the ability to request a call from support at a specified time. There's user-defined case severity. You can define the severity of your issue. So Premier as like A, B, and C, and Unified as a critical or non-critical to quickly receive the appropriate level of support. Of course, also that's going to depend on your level of support contract that you have with Office 365. You have case history exports. You can export all cases that were created in the past 13 months. 13 is an interesting number. You have a description character limit has been increased to 2,500 characters, so you can give a more detailed description of your issue. Intelligent self-service solutions, so you can receive immediate help from an automated assistant. Sounds like some machine learning there. And find better solutions with improved search powered by machine learning. An updated service request view as well, where you can visualize where you are in the lifecycle of a service request. So all that stuff is coming to the Office 365 Admin Center. Another thing too that I thought would be kind of appropriate to talk about right after this one is an update that's coming for everyone related to your Office or your SharePoint Admin Center. This is MC173771. And what Microsoft is doing is they're changing the default SharePoint Admin Center experience. So this is associated with a roadmap ID from the Microsoft 365 roadmap of 46375. So in the past, we've had this classic experience where you can use the old style experience, but they've been, over the last 2 years, they've been working on the new Admin Center. And so what they're doing is they're gradually rolling this out to standard release customers that have 50 or fewer licenses starting in late March, and they'll expand to larger organizations in the coming months. So this is going to make the new Admin Center will be your default experience instead of the classic experience being your default experience. So that's coming soon. This just feels to me like it's way late in coming. I mean, they talked about this new Admin Center two Ignites ago, like what was that, Ignite 2017, in September of 2017. So it's like a year and a half ago. And there's just so many things in that Admin Center that still feel like they should be done, that I shouldn't have to go back to the classic view to go see that stuff. But I will give them credit. They're actually getting there. So another one that we have, another update that we have here, this is MC173614. And the title of this update is Information Protection Updates to the Existing Office 365 E3 and E5 and Advanced Compliant and Information Protection. So what they're doing is they are updating the E5 and E3 licenses to include Advanced Compliance and Information Protection and Compliance SKUs. All of those are going to be updated to include Information Protection for Office 365 Standard or Premium. And it's going to depend on the license that you have. If you have Office 365 E3, if you have E5, if you have Advanced Compliance, it depends on what you have, what you're going to get. If you're going to get Standard or Premium license of the Information Protection for Office 365. So just check the SKUs to see what you're going to get there, to see what's in store for your update coming soon. Another one, this is MC173616. I love this update. I wish it was coming a lot sooner than this. Clutter for Outlook is being retired beginning January 31st, 2020. This is a feature that just drives me nuts. Between clutter and junk mail, and it just, let's just pick one and just stay with it. And so clutter is just, it's going away. It's being retired in January 31st of 2020. So it will be first set to where it will not be enabled on new mailboxes that are set up. And then it will just flat out be retired and removed as an option from us in starting at January 31st of next year. Couple other updates here. We've got Outlook Mobile is going to start to support Teams meetings. This is in 1738.95. That'll support Teams meetings so that now you'll be able to directly connect to a Teams-based meeting from Outlook, the Outlook mobile client. And then there's also some mobile admin updates. So you can do things like device management update. This is 1739.15. So today it allows you to get notifications, add users, reset passwords, manage devices, create support requests, all that kind of stuff. This is going to allow you to do a lot more stuff. Do things like rename the app from the Office 365 admin to, sorry, this is going to rename the app from the Office 365 admin to Microsoft 365 admin. It's going to also give you the ability to restore corporate devices to a factory state and to remove corporate data from personal devices. So these are all updates coming to your Office 365 tenants.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your codebase? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
All right, let's take a look at some Azure-related news. There's a boatload of Azure-related news here that I want to share with you. And there's some blog posts that the Azure team publishes on occasion that when they publish these things, they're more like roll-ups on the latest updates to things for this one product. And these things can be hard to find, so I want to make sure that we highlight these for you because they are quite useful in terms of getting a roll-up. So, you know, CJ and I try to make this show have some news in it that is going to serve as a roll-up for you as well to get like updates on some things that have happened recently. And these roll-up posts are also super helpful. Now, some of the ones I'm going to talk about in this show are such big roll-ups. I'm not going to be able to, I could identify an entire, we could like put across an entire episode just based on the stuff that we're seeing from these roll-ups. But I figured let's just go through and update them. So if you want to see all the updates, maybe it applies to you, then you can go dive in to the links that we provide. All right, the first one we're going to talk about is Trace for Azure IoT devices. You can now do distributed tracing. So what is this? So the W3C has defined something called distributed tracing. And the idea is that with this new or this relatively new microservices-based approach for doing development and where we have things like IoT devices that are logging messages to the public cloud, and then that information is then going through all these different processing engines and such. There's a lot of different components that are available to these types of implementations. And it can be hard to trace and correlate everything together so that when I have, you know, one IoT device logs some sort of an error, then that may go through a whole series of different processes. And I'd like to correlate all of those things, all those different processes that are each logging their different stuff. It would be nice to be able to have all those things all but get correlated together. And so the W3C has defined this thing called distributed tracing. And it's a standards-based approach thing. It's available to us. You can go learn more about it. There's a link to it in the show notes here. If you go to github.com/W3C/trace context, the idea here is that you're going to create this correlation ID, and it allows you to correlate events from one component with events from another component. And what Microsoft has done is they are, as more and more of the different Azure services are going to support distributed tracing, it's going to allow us to trace like IoT messages or whatever all the way through your entire solution here. And so what I've got here is in preview support, I've got a link to this new preview support that Microsoft has added for IoT devices that's going to allow you to take advantage of this distributed tracing and leverage it in your IoT-based application. So aside from being able to monitor the flow of each message through the IoT hub using the trace context, You'll also be able to automatically log the trace context to Azure Monitor Diagnostic Logs, measure and understand message flow and latency from devices to the IoT hub and routing endpoints. And you can also start to consider how you want to implement distributed tracing for non-Azure services in your IoT-based solution. So this walks through like how you can turn it on, how you can set up your device, how you can set up different sampling things, how you can query and visualize and understanding the different tracing things, and even like some details around understanding the preview limits and some considerations that you should take into account here. So some pretty cool stuff that they're adding. And this is going to be really useful, I mean, especially in a cloud environment where you've got so many different services that one implementation could take advantage of. Another link that I've got here is an update to the Azure DevOps Projects support for Azure Kubernetes services. So Microsoft has been trying to make it easy for customers to adopt Kubernetes by offering two different services. You've got AKS, Azure Kubernetes Service, which is a fully managed Kubernetes container orchestration service. And that helps you, as CJ and I have talked about in the past, helps you simplify the deployment and operations of Kubernetes, enables you to dynamically scale your app infrastructure with confidence and agility. And the other one is with Azure DevOps Projects. And so what this is a simplified experience that's going to help you launch an app on an Azure service of your choice with just a few steps. So like, for example, these things can help you provision AKS, the Azure Container Registry, and start building and deploying a container app to AKS using the Azure DevOps pipelines. So what's going to happen is that when you create a DevOps project, it's going to provision all the Azure resources that you need, including a Git repository, App Insights integration, and continuous delivery pipelines that have been set up to deliver to Azure. So some of the key benefits of this are you'll be able to get up and running with a new app in an Azure in a CI and CD pipeline with just a few minutes. It's got support for a whole wide range of frameworks like .NET, Java, PHP, Node, Python. You can start fresh, or you can bring your own app from GitHub. And like I said, you've got built-in App Insights and Azure Monitor for container integration for instant analytics and App Insights. So this is really cool. You have the ability to create a new AKS cluster or to leverage an existing cluster as well. So we got a blog post here that actually talks about it as well as, and it has some links pointing to things that you can go take a look at on some things that they've added here. Now, I mentioned Azure Monitor just a minute ago a little bit. Well, there have been a lot of updates to it. This is one of those roll-up posts that I was talking about just a few minutes ago. I got a blog post here for the Azure Monitor January 2019 updates. Now, this came out in early February, but there's a whole slew of updates in here. We've got updates to Application Insights. So being able to monitor end-to-end transactions, doing time scrubbing, you can drag and drop over a period of time to filter the view. You can view, as far as performance and failures go, they've squashed a bunch of bugs in the performance and failures tools. So like the roles tab preserves role selection when you navigate from the application map. It no longer shows duplicated role instances with empty role names. As far as availability goes, they fixed a bug where navigating from the scatter plot wouldn't show the closest result. They've also done a ton of stuff to the application map. There's a zoom and fit button. They've grouped node. You can do group nodes are now shown in a stack to make them easier to distinguish. That's a really cool UI update that they've done. You can expand and collapse, have expand and collapse buttons for the insights cards in the flyout menu that comes up. Nodes without incoming connections are now shown closer to their first outbound connection on the map, which should make maps easier to read. You have better support for proxies. Multiple services are called through the same host name by removing the proxy dependency node and linking directly to the service. And maps with many grouped edges, with many complex grouped edges, will now show in the stats. They've made updates to the pricing calculator, to the SDK. They have a standalone version for the App Insights provider for iLogger. There's a whole bunch of stuff around log analytics. They've like renamed the blade from the log analytics blade to log analytics workspaces. Data encryption has been enabled by default. Protection from losing queues on a page refresh. Schema updates for a table preview, a new table icon, featured things. There's new filters. You can set titles for your charts.
Workbook's got a lot of updates as well. You can now take an update and pin all of its sections as tiles to the Azure dashboard. Workbooks are created from troubleshooting guides, and Azure Monitor or resource groups now allow you to choose which subscription resource group and location where you want to save them. From the metrics page, you can now, you see there's a ton of stuff here, right? I'm not going to go through all this stuff. There's a bunch of updates around Azure VMs as well. If you're interested in seeing all this stuff, it's a pretty sizable post here. If you want to go dive in and take a look at this from the Azure Monitor 2019 updates, definitely something to take a look at. And also just one more little footnote here, related to Azure Monitor and App Insights, as of February the 21st, App Insights is now available in the East Australia and Japan East regions as well. Before they were not. Now collected data can now be stored locally in those regions. Now I talked a little bit about Azure DevOps. Well, we got some additional updates to Azure DevOps projects with some support now for Azure Cosmos DB and Azure Functions. So I got a link to this blog post entry as well in the show notes. So Microsoft has been making continuous enhancements to the DevOps projects in the latest development that is now available to everyone. They've added support for Cosmos DB and Azure Functions as target destinations for your application. This builds on the existing App Service, SQL Database, and AKS support that I covered a little bit earlier in this show. So this allows you just to have more options on where you deploy your applications using an Azure DevOps project. Another update that we have, this is available, this is now moved into general availability. Azure Cost Management is now GA for enterprise agreements customers. So this is going to allow you to make it easier to help you manage your cloud costs across your organization. Something I think CJ would definitely be interested in, having to maintain multiple subscriptions, Azure subscriptions over at Hyperfish. So you can set up budgets and you can export all of your data as well. And there's even a bunch of new APIs that you could take advantage of with, like, say, usage query and budgets, exports, and usage details by the management group. You can also set up alerts as well. They're not done yet, though. They've got a bunch of additional stuff that they're working on, things like the ability to save and schedule reports, additional capabilities and cost analysis, budgets, alerts, and exports, as well as show like other backing things in the coming months. So we'll keep an eye on this, and we'll definitely keep you updated on any new things that come out related to this. Now, the Azure portals also had a bunch of updates. Here's another one of our roll-up posts. This one is a gigantic post, so I'm definitely not going to read through all of this. But the Azure Management Portal, there's an update for the February 2019 update. This came out in early February. A bunch of updates they had are related to, I'll read out just the titles of these. So if it's something that interests you, you can go dive into the link that I have in the show notes. Around compute or IaaS or virtual machines, there's the ability to add a new virtual machine directly to an application gateway or load balancer, to migrate a classic VM to Azure Resource Manager, to take a virtual machine scale set, do a password reset on those. For the cloud shell, you can export as a CSV all the resources and resource groups. And there's also a layout change for essential properties on overview pages. For site recovery, they've got a bunch of UI updates, and they've also got a bunch of updates related to Microsoft Intune. So a bunch of updates there that you can go take a look at. And then last but not least, is an update to Azure Data Factory. Microsoft has added a bunch of new connectors to Azure Data Factory that's going to empower a bunch of richer insights into your applications here. So some of the updates that they have provided to us, there's an update to Cosmos DB APIs for Mongo, where you can now copy data to and from Cosmos DB's Cosmos database APIs for MongoDB, and to get in addition to the already existing support for the SQL API. For Amazon S3, it's going to enable S3 export configuration of an S3 container. For Google Cloud Storage, it provides S3 compatible interop, where you can now copy data from Google Cloud Storage. For MongoDB, they've gotten a bunch of feedback on the feature coverage, performance, and scalability. And so they've made a bunch of improvements to it based on customer feedback. Azure Database for MariaDB, you can now copy data from Azure Database for MariaDB using this new connector. As far as just general REST APIs, you can now retrieve data from various RESTful services and apps. It releases a more targeted REST connector in addition to the generic HTTP connector. So the two most common asks that they had received that this REST connector is now going to support Azure AD, the Azure AD service principal, and a managed identity for Azure resources, MSI authenticators, as well as pagination rules. And there's also generic OData. It supports the Azure AD service principal and managed identity for Azure resources as well when copying data from an OData endpoint. And then finally, in preview, they've released a Dynamics AX connector as well, where you can use OData protocol with a service principal authentication. And it also works with Dynamics 365 finance and operations. And you can visit the Azure Data Factory or this blog post that's got links to each one of those different connectors. You can use that to dive in and see what new things have been added there. So that about wraps up all the news we had. Well, I mean, we had quite a bit of news. I think about 10 or 15 different things there that I just ran through, both between Office 365 updates and Microsoft Azure updates. So you're all caught up on the latest stuff that's been going on in the Microsoft Office 365 space.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
All right, the next thing we got are picks. So we don't have CJ here, so I don't have a pick for CJ, but I do have a listener pick by someone who's a frequent guest of the show, Paul Schaeflein, who's a fellow Microsoft MVP in the Office space and also runs the podcast with Jeremy Thake. And he sent a link in for the NASA Earth Observatory site. This is really cool. It's a photo essay from NASA's Earth Science Division. And it's got basically what this is a really cool site where you can click through a bunch of pictures that they've collected over time on topics related to the atmosphere, related to water, related to land, ice and snow. You can just dive in and they have a nice little description of what each one of these pictures are and what you're looking at. It's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting here. Like there's this one that is referring to the Mongolian desert lakes. And it's pretty cool because it shows like the source of water for some of these different lakes that are in the desert. And it's just, it looks like this like mathematical formula, like how it's all been laid out here. It's pretty interesting here. As well as looking at like, you know, the faults in China for, what do you call that? The faults like in the plates, tectonic plates that also generate earthquakes on these different fault lines. Really cool pictures here. They're a really good find by Paul. So Paul, definitely send us your address so that we can send you a solo key from the Microsoft Cloud Show. We can definitely get this to you. So thanks a lot for sharing that link. So my link is staying with the space theme, but we're going to go pretty geeky here. Well, I mean, shocker with the space theme. And which, if you're familiar with the show, you're a frequent listener to the show. So SpaceX this past week, actually last night, they launched a Falcon 9 rocket that had three payloads on it. There was one that was putting a satellite for the Indonesian government for a geotransfer orbit that was going to be a communication satellite for Indonesia for helping with additional broadband coverage and TV and radio coverage. And then another thing that they did, which is, it's an interesting note here, is that there's an Israeli company or nonprofit that has created the first privately funded, and I'm going to put an asterisk on that, but the first privately funded lunar lander up. So all lunar landers that have gone up from, I believe it's just the United States, Russia, and China are the only countries that have put a lunar lander up and landed on the moon. Israel is about to become the fourth country in about 2 months or so. So you may be familiar with this thing called the Google X Prize. And the Google X Prize was a prize to an organization that was able to land a private organization that was able to land a lunar module on the surface of the moon. Nobody won the prize. They kept changing the date of it, trying to give the participants a little more time to launch. But nobody ever ended up launching by the final deadline that was set, which was March 2018 of last year. But this Israeli company, they have, with their $90 million probe they're putting up, or lunar module, only $2 million came from the Israeli government. That's the asterisk part. So $88 million of the $90 million was all done as a private funding and donations and fundraising. So what's interesting about this one, it's going to take about 2 months for it to go. It's up, it's in a healthy state right now, and it's going to be doing an elliptical orbit around Earth. And every time it gets closer to Earth, it's going to fire its engines to pick up speed to make that elliptical orbit a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And eventually it's going to get captured when it comes around. It's going to get captured by the moon and enter into the moon or lunar orbit and then ultimately land. Now, once it lands, it's not going to be alive for very long. And there was some news that originally came out where it was going to land, and then it was going to kind of hop from one location over to another location by like 500 meters. That was part of the rules for the Google XPRIZE. Now they've deemed that to be, since the Google XPRIZE doesn't exist anymore and they're not going to get the money for that, they've deemed that to be a little too risky. So they cut that as an option. They never fully tested it. Who knows, when they get there, they may decide, once they've done everything, let's give it a shot and see what happens, because it's only going to last, I think this thing only lasts for about 2 days once it's there. But that's not what my pick was about. I just wanted to rant on about a little bit of spacey stuff. What my pick is about this new engine that SpaceX is creating for their upcoming Starship rocket. And so what this is, you kind of have to understand what the importance here is of this technology by looking at understanding how rocket engines work today. And I'm going to try not to go too detailed with this, but just give you a bit of an understanding on where it is today. And maybe you'll learn something from this. So what I would recommend you do to go find like the details of this whole thing, and actually a picture, you know, serves 1,000 words here, is if you go to the link that I'm going to post here on the site hackaday.com, the title of the article is "The Impossible Tech Behind SpaceX's New Engine." The engine's called the Raptor engine. And the engines that we've been using that SpaceX has been using is called a Merlin engine. So the way that this works, it uses something called an open cycle. And it's actually wasteful by design. And the way it works is that it's a gas generator. And what you end up having to do here is, or the way these work, is that you've got to pump fuel into the main engine, that the thing that's creating all the fire, that's going to give it most of the propulsion. Well, you've actually got a little engine that sits beside it that is used to spin the turbines to pump the fuel at a certain rate into the main engine. So it's called a gas generator. It works on a totally different principle than the engine itself. And it has its own fuel supply. Well, what the more modern approach to this, so first of all, the downside to that approach is that you have to have a secondary fuel system for the gas generator. That adds additional weight and complexity, the last thing you really want on a rocket engine. So the more modern approach for this, which is what's used in Falcon 9's Merlin engine, is to power the turbine by burning a relatively small amount of the same fuel and oxidizer that the primary engine uses. So in this case, the gas generator is usually referred to as something called the pre-burner. But if the pre-burner is given the same fuel and oxidizer as the engine itself at the same ratio, it would essentially just be a smaller rocket. And the exhaust would be way too hot to run through the turbine. So to get around this, the pre-burner is run on a fuel-rich mixture, which leads to an incomplete combustion and a lower exhaust temperature. So it serves the purpose to spin the turbine, but it doesn't melt it at a super high rate of heat. Now, the defining characteristic of this open cycle engine is that the exhaust from the pre-burner, it just gets dumped overboard as a waste product. And so in some of the rockets you look at, you may see like this black streak. So if you zoom in on a lot of these different rocket engines that work today, especially like a SpaceX rocket, if you get a close-up picture of it, you'll see like next to the engine this black smoke coming. And it almost looks like something bad is happening. But that's just the pre-burner and his exhaust dump that's being like dumped overboard for this. Now, it's never been a secret that there were performance gains to be made if you could close that cycle. And what I mean by that is that if you could capture the exhaust from the pre-burner and feed it into the engine's combustion chamber, it'd be much better. But the sooty exhaust that's produced by the unburned kerosene, which is rocket-grade kerosene, which is also called RP-1, it's unsuitable for recirculation through the engine. So it ended up being easier just to build bigger rocket engines than to try and capture that lost fuel. So the Soviets worked on an engine like this. They figured something out that was like that, that could do this new mix. And it did it implemented in an engine called the RD-180, which is a very popular engine. It's what the American Atlas V rocket uses. But we're trying to get away from that technology because, well, it's Russian technology. So we're trying to have something that's a little more modern. So American engineers went in a different direction than Russians did. They believed that fuel-rich mixture in the pre-burner was possible and could be done without the existing metal alloys that we had been working with. So long as that the hydrogen that was used as the fuel, you would use that instead of kerosene. So that led to the development of the space shuttle main engine, which is, to date, we still see that as the most efficient liquid fuel rocket that's ever been flown. While it since has been retired, a variation of that engine is what NASA is planning on using on the SLS rocket, the Space Launch System. And it will be the most powerful rocket that NASA's ever built. Missions are supposed to begin next year. Now, whichever the approach you use, it's definitely an improvement instead of dumping stuff overboard. But it still is not an ideal scenario or solution, as there's still potentially combustible products that are being wasted. So the Soviet Union and United States both had solved the different halves of the same problem, but to truly close the cycle of the fuel-rich and oxidizer-rich pre-burner designs would need to ultimately be utilized simultaneously in the same engine. So we call this, the logical conclusion of this, is we call this the full-flow staged combustion engine. So the cool thing about this is that what SpaceX has done is they've created an engine that does this. We call this the Raptor engine. Now, what this means is that we're able to build a smaller engine that is much more efficient and thus much more powerful, right? So we're getting really, really close to this. SpaceX just tested out their engine for the first time. It only ran for just a couple seconds. That was by design. And the first iteration of it, there was a bunch, it's a classic test. They intended it only to run for a couple seconds. Not only that, they only intended it to be, they expected it to do some damage to the engine when it actually ran. They have a new version of it that they were already working on. They were just testing out the tech and make sure the tech was feasible. But they have a new version of it that should be ready in the next few months, next year, for additional testing. And keeping in mind, this is not the first of the full flow stage combustion engines that's to be built. The Soviet Union did build one that was like this. But what's interesting about this one is that so far that the SpaceX Raptor engine has already shown to be more powerful than the one that we had before, that we had with the Russians had built. So if you are to believe Twitter and Elon Musk's tweets, he claims that he's going to have a prototype of the Raptor-powered Starship to make low-altitude hops around their test facility in the next couple months. Now, a lot can happen with that. If you haven't seen it, they've got their Starship prototype that they've built, which is relatively small compared to the whole thing. It's still a really big rocket, but it's relatively small, and it almost looks like science fiction when you see it's got these just small little engines, what look like small little engines on the size of this rocket. Take that and compare it to the size of the Merlin engines at the bottom of a Falcon 9 rocket, and you'll see how the size difference really kicks in, how they're able to have a much smaller engine give you the power for a much larger rocket. So if it happens in the next few months, cool. If it doesn't happen in the next few months and it happens in 2019 or 2020, that's still a huge progress on rocket engines. And at this rate, it's looking pretty promising for what SpaceX is doing with this new engine. So it's pretty darn impressive. So I don't know. I find this stuff to be pretty cool. I like the science behind it, or I like the engineering behind it. They say, hey, this isn't rocket science. Well, this is rocket science. And it's interesting when you start to see what they're doing, and they've dumbed it down enough, in this article, so you can understand what this stuff does or what the importance here is. All right. That's about enough for me. We've gone through, talked a lot of notes, a lot of news and updates around Office 365. Same thing around Azure. A lot of updates around Office 365 and Azure. Got a pair of picks, one from me and one from Paul Schaeflein as a listener pick. Again, Paul, don't forget to send us your address so that we can hand you a solo key, or I'll just see you in a couple of weeks, actually, out at the MVP Summit in Redmond. So with that, hey, one final ask from you guys. CJ and I are thinking right now on the plans on what are we going to do for episode 300. So for episode 100, we let the wives take over. For episode 200, we let you guys all, you know, chime in and give us your thoughts on the show and some funny stuff about the show. Something that, you know, we gave away a bunch of stuff for. We gave away a laptop, gave away an Xbox. Now we'd like to do, actually we gave away a pair of Xboxes, if I'm not mistaken. Now we want to do something for episode 300. So that's coming up in just about 2 months now. So we got to figure out, what are we going to do? We got a couple ideas. I'm curious, what would you guys do? So give me your ideas. Send them in. Best way to send them in to us, either ping us on Twitter, that's at MS Cloud Show, or go find us on Facebook and send us a message through our Facebook page. That's the best way to do it. We've shut down the comment form on our website because spammers have just gone berserk on us and CAPTCHA is just a pain in the butt. Frankly, I'd rather connect with people on Twitter and on Facebook. So with that, that's it for me this week. Next week, you probably get CJ. Maybe CJ and I, maybe just CJ solo. I'm teaching a class next week with a customer up in St. Louis, and so I may not be available to record a show with him, but regardless, you'll get your episode. All right, everybody, have a good one. We will talk to you soon.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.